Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Chris McKenna on raising kids in a digitally saturated culture.
Not every conversation about pornography needs to be in depth and has to be a PowerPoint and research and super serious. I want parents to understand that it's actually in the little drips and the little just invitations. It doesn't even have to include the word pornography, that you equip your kids to come to you when they struggle with pornography.
Chris McKenna, next. Chris McKenna, founder of Protect Young Eyes, a leading ministry in digital safety, has written the book, Five Habits of the Tech-Ready Family. His goal is to provide biblically-based guidance to help parents and kids navigate the digital world. Here's Spencer Dahlke.
Would you tell us a little bit about the most formative moments for you in your story and what led you to found Protect Young Eyes and write Five Habits of the Tech-Ready Family?
Sure. To be honest, Spencer, I'm supposed to be a CFO at a company right now. I'm an accountant by background. I was 12 years in business until the Lord called me into full-time ministry, and loved working and volunteering in our church with students, but never expected it to be a full-time endeavor. So after being over a decade in business risk at Ernst & Young, I then moved into working full-time in the local church. Now, what's important about that is the time frame, Spencer. That was from 2009 to 2016. So you think about the evolution of technology. That's right on the heels of the iPhone coming out in 2007. And then we have Instagram and Snapchat and this new word, selfie, that comes out in about 2012. And I watched my amazing parents giving my amazing junior high students in ministry this new device, this hand-me-down iPhone 5. And parents simply didn't know. They weren't bad parents, but we all believed this techno-optimism that everything that was technology, especially the iPhone, right? This is good and this is great. But kind of underneath all of that, what's important to know about my story, and you know, I've been married to my wife for 26 years. I'm a dad to four. So right, I'm right in the middle of this too. But as a child, I had been exposed to pornography. I brought compulsive use of pornography into my young adult and college years and into marriage. Was able to come through that through Christ and accountability and a band of brothers that we worked on that together. And then over a decade later, I watched us put that monster back in kids' pockets. All of that is sort of colliding. My own personal journey through addiction, my experience watching families and my church give students technology they didn't understand, a consulting background that sees problems and fixes problems, and that led to creating a website called protectyoungeyes.com in 2015 just to help my parents. And then from there, here we are today. About 2 years ago, I decided to jump into this full time and put this all in a book, what I've been hearing all over the world, actually, for the past 10 years, parents that are stumbling and bumbling against technologies, sometimes succeeding, sometimes not, and it's often not their fault. The deck is stacked against us, and so I want to level the playing field, and that's literally why I wrote the book.
I had a conversation not too long ago about it's easy to think that this progress is not a thing we can resist, and there's just so much danger to it. Can be kind of discouraging. But it seems like maybe our culture is changing for the better. Do you think that's true? As individuals, parents, church members, etc., how do we think about technology? Are we becoming more aware of it, or where are we at?
Well, I think that the sides are definitely becoming more defined. What I found first coming into this, Spencer, was everybody was kind of okay with it. And there were a few on the fringe who were nervous and didn't like what we were doing. And I was one of those sort of on the fringe. I mean, back in 2014, 2015, the don't give your kids smartphones or social media island was pretty sparsely populated because it was just Instagram. It's just pictures. How bad could it be? And clearly, the parents that I were working with at the time had never created an account of their own. They would have seen what was the wild, wild west. We think social media is bad today, Spencer. In the early days, it was the wild west of completely unfiltered content and interactions with horrible things, trust me. And so there was a bit of a mix. Now what I'm seeing, because of awesome research that has come to light, books like The Anxious Generation, that has just totally changed the global conversation, that has now elevated this idea that maybe we made a mistake, not only at home, but also in the classroom. And so I'm seeing the divide. I'm seeing a bigger gap in the middle. There's still parents who, for whatever reason, aren't choosing to delay or are giving their kids access to iPads while they're in the car on the way to preschool. We know that's horrible for attention. There's still that. But there is this growing movement of parents who are like, time out. We've seen the evidence. We've been watching the trials. We have information from behind the curtain. We have whistleblowers. We've seen all the hockey stick-like charts of what's going on with anxiety and depression. The days of parental ignorance are over. And they've decided to go back to things that have always worked. And that is human-to-human connection, young humans interacting with other young humans in a world where they need to be physically figuring things out on their own. They need to be falling out of trees and riding their bikes, and play dates don't count. Really figuring things out. Why? Because, Spencer, whether you're a bear or a boy, to become a more resilient adult version of yourself means having some freedom and risk to play as a younger version of yourself. And we've just ignored all of those things that have worked since Genesis 1, and physically created by a relational God in relationship with us, in relationship with each other, has always been the best place for us. And somehow we forgot that.
Where do you think you see families maybe still moving too quickly in giving freedoms to their children, or maybe even restrictions that don't need to be there when it comes to like our technologies?
Sure. Yeah, I think what I'm hearing is, you know, where are maybe some of the blind spots? Maybe where are some of the places where we're not necessarily appreciating where some of the harms may be? Social media, obviously, Chris, I get that. Pornography, obviously, Chris, I get that. But there are blind spots that a number of parents have. For example, yes, I want to filter and block as much explicit pornographic content out of kids' lives as possible. But Spencer, there is a whole list of 100 different mature adult topics and ideas that aren't pornographic that I still don't want children to see, experience, or hear. And so when we drop children inside of, let's say, YouTube or even YouTube Kids, don't believe it for a minute, there are all kinds of non-pornographic yet adult, mature, inappropriate messages that our children are exposed to even when restricted mode is on. Because every second of every day, thousands and thousands of videos are dropped into YouTube without any moderation, without any filtering. And we're expecting the algorithm and a handful of moderators to figure this out. So, like, just as one example, as a Christian society, you know, for Christian families, they have, for the most part, totally underappreciated the impact that YouTube can have on the hearts and minds of kids. Just as one example, Chris, it's not pornography. I know. It's still too much too soon. And to be honest, YouTube is pretty much social media because it has an algorithm. It has likes. It has comments. It has content. It has all the things that you think of when you think of Instagram or even TikTok. And by the way, in YouTube, you basically have TikTok. We just call it YouTube Shorts. It's the same exact thing. Just right. So these are blind spots. Roblox is another blind spot. To parents, they hear Roblox, it's a game. When we were growing up, when you said the name of something, it represented a game. It was Pac-Man. It was Frogger. It was Galaga. It was a game. Roblox is not a game. Roblox is a universe of millions of games that just happens to have this overriding name called Roblox, which inside of it has over 120 million people. Three times the size of Tokyo, playing millions of games every single day. That's what you drop your child inside of when you say, hey, go ahead and let them play. And the predatory and all kinds of ways that you can chat and the mature content. And I could go on and on. Those are just two of the examples. And why I wrote the book the way that I did, Spencer, is because every single month, day, week, there's going to be something else. Another app, another website, something else that probably isn't good for our kids. And it can feel a little bit like whack-a-mole sometimes trying to figure out all of them. Now, we educate a lot on that side because we want parents to understand them. But I wrote Five Habits of the Tech Ready Family because these are principles. Whether you're talking about pornography or Fortnite or AI, you can apply these principles. Whatever's next that I haven't even thought of yet, right? These five principles will, I believe, and I've seen it all over the world, be effective no matter what game, app, or issue. These are principles that you'll be able to apply to whatever comes next. That's why it was important to write it the way that I did.
Looking at the habits, I kind of wanted to spend some time. Actually, one thing caught my attention as you were writing in chapter two. You're talking about the first habit, modeling good behavior, you know, when it comes to monitoring ourselves, how we're using technology and this sort of a thing. And you quote from a neuroscientist, Alicia Wolf, about boredom being good for our mental health, development, what have you. Kicking off the idea of boredom, what caught your attention about boredom and why do you see it as a good way to model tech to use?
Right. So there's boredom that is helpful and boredom that leads to, you know, bad behaviors just because you're looking for trouble. That's not really what I'm talking about. But as a created species, neurologically, the way in which you process your day, analyze the way you're feeling, store up memories, and then apply those things that you just experienced in a helpful way the next time something happens. These are all experiences that happen during quiet moments. So there's something in our brain called the default mode network. The default mode network is this state of our brain. Think of it sort of like an organizing tool of what we've been thinking about experiencing so that we can then do something with it later. This happens during still quiet moments. It's during those moments, if you remember as a kid, even as an adult, let's be real practical for a minute. For anybody listening to this, when do you have your best ideas? When do you have an epiphany? And I'll answer that question. It's when you're weeding the garden, when you're out for a walk, when you're taking a shower. Why? Because those are moments when your brain has time to just process. In fact, I wrote, and I have a big section of this in the book titled, Busy People Don't Have Epiphanies. That's just the way that our brain is. And we even can look to scripture. Elijah in 1 Kings didn't find God in the wind, in the fire, or in the earthquake. It was in the cleft, in the still, and then he heard the voice of the Lord, right? Be still and know that I am God. It's in the stillness that we experience, I believe, transformation. My own story is that transformation of being on a run and finally hearing what I think God was saying for a long time. It's time to be open and honest about your struggles with pornography and to leave that behind, right? That happened on a run, that happened in the quiet. That's why I don't run with headphones. I live out in the country. I need that still and that quiet. So that's what I mean. How in the world, Spencer, will our children know what it means to experience human-to-human connection and to set our devices down if we don't show them how? So it starts by modeling the right behaviors, by doing these things and showing them. And I have a whole list of micro moves. I'm not saying that you have to bubble wrap and turn off all tech and become Amish and move out into some commune. I'm saying, listen, little micro moves that you can make to show your children the significance of them, the significance of human-to-human connection, and that your device doesn't rule you. So habit number one starts with us. Model the right behaviors.
Well, my guest today is Chris McKenna. He is founder of Protect Young Eyes and author of Five Habits of the Tech Ready Family, Raising Wise Kids in a Wild Digital World. Let me throw out a thought for you that I actually had while I was taking a walk myself. So it seems to me, thinking of like bad boredom, that there is a toxicity, shall we say, to having a habit of saying no to our kids that maybe prompts us to say, well, what is left for us to do if I can't do this and I can't do all of these good things, but, you know, wicked and evil things that our devices give us to do? I guess a big question, what do you think about that? Do you think that's true? Or how can we, as parents, I guess, model a habit of saying yes by default?
Well, I think there are approaches that we have with other things in the world that maybe we can apply to technology. So I do quite a bit of consulting with schools and churches, mostly schools, around how to have a better relationship with technology in the classroom, personal devices in cafeteria and passing time, those kinds of things. The framing is very important when we're trying to implement new policies. And I'll get to how this applies to the house kind of through the door of schools here. It's not that we're taking phones away. It's not a phone-free policy. what we're doing is giving you the gift of a distraction-free learning environment. We're giving you the gift of a full-on relationship with others around you. We're giving you the gift of lower anxiety if you're a child. We're giving you the gift of less frequent interactions with pornographic content. We're giving you the gift of a brain that can hold attention for longer than 10 seconds in a world that, as an adult, will probably demand that you hold your attention for more than 10 seconds. So instead of our framing always being what they can't or what we are denying, actually, Spencer, these are beautiful gifts that we're giving our children by showing discernment, wisdom, and restraint in the face of technologies that were not designed for their thriving. That's what we have to never, ever forget. I don't care what Disney Princess is on the app, that it's called YouTube Kids. None of the digital spaces that our kids want to spend time in were designed with their thriving in mind. And it's because of the incentives in the business model is a business and incentive model of extraction. Through social media and algorithms, it was the extraction of human attention. Now with AI and AI chatbots, it's the extraction of human affection. It wants a relationship with us. It doesn't just want our attention to put us in a relationship with a million people. AI actually just wants a relationship with one person, and that's you. And I will make you feel as though you're talking to a human with voice and words and inflection. That is even more insidious than anything we ever experienced with social media. And parents are finally figuring out that social media might have been bad, and now they're 100 steps behind on AI. So when you understand the why, you understand childhood development, which is what Chapter 3 is all about. When you understand the design of these technologies, which is what Chapter 1 and then Chapter 7 are all about, I think it gives us the motivation and the courage as parents to understand why delay is the way. That's our hashtag. It's not because we're anti-technology. Delay is the way is a slow tech strategy. Right kid, right tech at the right time. Why? Because I know how God made you. I know how Silicon Valley made their stuff. And that is an incompatibility that I'm not willing to put into your life. These authentic conversations, real direct and open and honest, and it's not even always just what they can't do. Instead of always saying no, show your children what the path to yes might look like. Over time, if you show me enough trust, if these are behaviors that I see in you, the answer may be yes in a few years to a smartphone or to social media. Again, the framing of it really matters to your point. If we're always no, 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 and negativity and consequence and yelling when it comes to our technology, then what are the chances our kid is going to come to us when something horrible happens? That's digital trust. That's Chapter 2, step by step, chat by chat. So I hope parents will see how these principles work together in really beautiful ways to create that confidence, to give you the reasons and the information why, so that you can have some of these really authentic conversations with your kids.
Building relationships with other people and with our kids. You write in a number of places about as parents leading with grace and truth. How can parents connect more with their children's hearts and approach these conversations about like porn that can be often tied with a lot of feelings of shame?
You mentioned grace and truth. That's not your idea or my idea, right? I'll give St. John credit for that. John chapter 1:14, that Jesus was that example of grace and truth. So as we interact with our children, both when they're behaving well online and when they're not, let's never forget the order. The order is grace first and then truth. And so digital trust and being open and honest. And I go through how to build digital trust there in chapter 2. But we just always have to remember that it's almost impossible to talk about these things too much with our kids. Not every conversation about pornography needs to be in depth and has to be a PowerPoint and research and super serious. I want parents to understand that it's actually in the little drips and the little just invitations. It doesn't even have to include the word pornography, that you equip your kids to come to you when they struggle with pornography. Look at car time, meal time, and together time. You're driving down the road, pull up to a stop sign, turn down the radio. Turn to your child, captive audience. They're not going anywhere. They're in a seatbelt. hey, hon, I just want you to know, if you ever see anything online that makes you uncomfortable, whatever it is, you can land safely and softly with me. I'll never be mad, never a bad time, never in trouble. And never in trouble doesn't mean there won't be a consequence. I might have to take the device away, but honey, I've got you. I'm going to hold you through that, whatever it is. Turn up the radio and keep driving. Spencer, that's a porn talk. Wasn't complicated, wasn't elegant. They didn't clap when you were done. It wasn't necessary for any of those things. That is building digital trust. That is pursuing authentic connection. That is going after the heart of a child in the face of lowercase g godlike technology that is algorithmically constantly pursuing the heart of your child. So we have to drip these little reminders in over and over and over and over again. If they're not rolling their eyes and finishing your sentences, then you haven't said it enough. To me, that's the instruction that the Lord gives us, going all the way back to the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 6, 5 through 9, the Shema, where Moses reminds the people of the Ten Commandments and then basically gives them a roadmap for parenting. Remind them that God is the Lord when you walk, when you go to bed, when you wake up, wrap it around your head, put it on the door frames of your house. In other words, be an algorithm to your kids. That's what I hear in Moses' words. So we need to be more algorithmic than the algorithms that we have given our children in technology today. And it starts with just those little drips. So I hope that for those listening, that encourages you. Again, it doesn't have to be elegant. It doesn't have to be a presentation. It just needs to be you from your heart. Drips consistent. Get it out there. And the second time you do it, you'll feel more confident. Trust me.
Not going to get to all five habits, but looking at building encouraging work and play seems to me a great place to land, looking at the positive, not that, like you mentioned earlier, not that we are discouraging one thing, but rather that we are aiming and have a vision for human flourishing in the positive. This is what we are to do. How do we do that as parents and our kids? What does that look like in their lives, do you think?
Well, habit three then is to encourage work and play. I mean, from the time that I was a kid to kids today, and this is reinforced with a Harvard study that I talk about, chores are a predictor of adult success. They just are. If you're a child who has a consistent pattern of doing chores that creates certain behaviors in you and disciplines in you as you get older. So we need to feel a part of a family system where we have responsibilities. That's the work part. And I talk about different ways of doing that and point toward a friend of mine, Melissa Griffin, the HR mom, refer to her, and that's a part of it. Then there's the play part, right? We need to play. Our kids need to play. We need to play. We need them out playing with their friends. And again, what does that look like? That's interacting in the world without us sometimes. There's a secure base that's created during attachment in early childhood that then gives our children the courage to go out and experience the world without us. Take some risks. Fall out of trees from time to time. Don't get picked for the team. Whatever it is, they need to experience these things and then come back to us. And so that work and play. Spencer, there's a stat that I share in chapter three. Did you know that the United Nations handbook requires that if you have prisoners as a country, you're required to give them 1 hour of outdoor time every single day? How many of our young people get less time outside than prisoners? Think about that. And so let's not forget that if it's good for criminals, it's probably good for our children. And you know what I mean by that? I'm not saying that there's always apples to apples in that. But I mean, if we understand that that's a healthy part of their recovery from whatever crime they've committed, then it's probably good for the thriving of our child. That's all in chapter three. And you know, just to tease, chapter four then gets into the neurology and the why. And then chapter five is all the practical step-by-step router software, all the stacks of protection that we need to put around our kids, which can I know be overwhelming, but I feel like we do a really good job of just demystifying that in a way that any parent can understand.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to today's guest, Chris McKenna, founder of Protect Young Eyes and author of Five Habits of the Tech Ready Family. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Nicolette Bell on embracing more of the joy of Jesus in your life.
I think that we've been sold a lie as believers to think that we would be exempt from any type of trouble. We should, not that we're negative Nancy's and looking around, you know, for trouble or trying to find trouble, but we shouldn't be surprised or knocked off our socks when that happens, because we should expect it in a way. But we can also cling to the other part of that promise, that we can be of good cheer. We can have joy. We can have hope because Jesus has overcome the world. And that promise is just as sure as the first promise.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.